An act of mercy and rhetorical discipline at the same time, President Obama meeting with victims' families from the Aurora shooting.
Although the perpetrator of this evil act has received a lot of attention over the last couple of days, that attention will fade away. And in the end, after he has felt the full force of our justice system, what will be remembered are the good people.
Did you hear that? The perpetrator. No names used. At the request of the victims' families, the name of the shooter, James Holmes, was not used by the president. Other names from this tragedy were mentioned, though.
It's worth us spending most of our time reflecting on young Americans like Allie and Stephanie, because they represent what's best in us. And they assure us that out of this darkness, a brighter day is going to come.
It is certainly tempting to try and aggressively respond to violence like the shooting in Aurora, Colorado, with some resolution, not to use the name of the shooter, to only focus on the victims, a strategy that suggests whatever moral chaos produced this shooting, as a society, we might have our priorities straight. But is it as simple as that? John Cassidy, staff writer for The New Yorker, joins us now. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for inviting me on, John.
What's the impulse here to not mention the shooter? Where does it come from, and what's its intended outcome?
Well, I think the impulse is a very human one, you know, to sympathize with the victims and to sort of write the shooter out of history and not give him what he wants, in the sense that a lot of these shootings, people are looking for attention, and this seems to be the case here. This seems to have been a desperate sort of plea for attention on James Holmes's part. So a lot of the families asked the president if he wouldn't mention his name, and he went along with the request. So I think it's understandable on a human sense. Whether it's good politics, good policy, that's what I question.
What's the flaw here?
Well, I think the flaw in it is the president said there in the clip you played, you know, out of this darkness will come a brighter day. I mean, that's sort of therapeutic talk. What's he actually doing to ensure a brighter day? We're talking about, you know, yet another gun tragedy here. The issue are the gun laws. The president, by, you know, focusing exclusively on the victims, refusing to name the shooter, I think it's all a way of sort of not focusing on the real issues here, which is what are we going to do about the gun laws? How did this disturbed 24-year-old come to be armed like a sort of, a terrorist, really, with massive amounts of ammunition, an automatic rifle? It's the gun laws. These things happen time after time after time. And if we're not going to even mention who the perpetrators are, I think it's just a way of sort of avoiding the real issues here.
We're talking with John Cassidy, staff writer for The New Yorker. Well, let me push back a little bit. I mean, I think they got plenty of gun laws in Norway, and it didn't stop Mr. Breivik from carrying out a much bigger massacre. I'm wondering if the impulse to talk about gun laws is the same kind of tempting impulse to not mention the shooter. It's just something we feel we have to do because doing nothing seems so unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could make that argument. I'm not saying tightening the gun laws would stop these things completely. I mean, other countries do have them. But there have been instances in the past in places like Britain, for example, where I grew up. There was a big massacre in 1987. Michael Ryan, whose name is still famous as the Hungerford shooter, his name is now associated with a very effective set of gun laws, and there hasn't been a sort of big massacre like that in Britain since then. There was one in Dunblane in Scotland, not as big. That led to a further tightening of gun laws, and then since then, there hasn't been any shootings. Same thing in Canada, or to a large extent, where there was a big mass shooting in the late 80s, and that led to some gun laws. There wasn't any attempts there to, you know, sort of write the shooter out of history.
So your takeaway there would be create a Holmes Act, where you basically create a law that's designed in some way to specifically go at some aspect of this that might be preventive, but you enshrine the name of the killer, or alleged killer in this case, in some policy.
Right. It doesn't have to be officially called a Holmes Act. But sure, I mean, I think, you know, there's a sort of political utility to vilifying, in a way, you know, these mass killers and turning them into a symbol of something larger. I mean, it can also be done the other way in terms of using the victims as a way of humanizing these tragedies. Obviously, you know, James Brady managed to do that back in the 80s and 90s. But it doesn't seem to be a way of, there are so many victims in these cases that, you know, it doesn't usually revolve around one person. Carolyn Maloney, but the Long Island Massacre did the same as well, to some extent. We need, you know, there's a great, there are great forces stopping any change in the gun laws. There's a massive gun lobby. There's the NRA. You need a way of sort of fighting back against that. And one way of fighting back against it, I think, is by personalizing these things around, you know, the either one of the victims or one of the shooters.
Although, John, and you write eloquently in The New Yorker, but I look in the face of that, you know, James Holmes, you know, with that clownish red hair there sitting at the courtroom table. I don't see a preventive measure here. I don't see a lot of, oh, man, boy, I made a mistake here. I'm not going to do that again.
Well, no, it's not a matter of that. It's, look, this guy looks crazy, right? How can a crazy guy like this get access to, you know, a large armory, basically? Surely that's...
Because he did everything completely legally. I mean, he just, he's a good student, walks into a sporting goods store and buys some guns.
Of course he did everything legally, John. That's the problem. You know, the laws are the problem here. You know, it's not the...
I guess what I'm saying, John, is he didn't go in with a sweatshirt that said, I'm crazy.
Of course he didn't. But nobody should be able to buy that amount of weaponry, you know, just for without explaining what they need it for. I mean, you get in other countries in the world, you can't just go and buy an automatic rifle and buy 3,000 rounds of ammunition. That's a very American view of things. And we have a very American phenomenon here, which is mass shootings, which happen every year or two.
No, it's true. And this is the highest incarceration rate country in the world as well. So America is in a unique sort of situation regarding both these kinds of crimes and the access to weapons. We're talking with John Cassidy, staff writer for The New Yorker. What's the precedent in other shootings in America? Have the shooters become enshrined in some sort of public legend but because of being mentioned so much in the media?
I don't think they have really, John. I mean, that's because these things are so common. I mean, one of the things I did when I wrote the piece was to go back and look at a long list of the previous mass shootings and just see if I could name off the top of my head the shooters involved. And in very few cases I could. I remembered a couple of the names involved with Columbine, but that was about it. I think these
Columbine, Klebold, and Harris. What were some of the other crimes?
The Sung-Yung Chin of the Virginia Tech massacre.
Right.
And we go back, you know, going back all the way to the Fullerton massacre in the 80s, which I remember, the Long Island shooter on the subway train.
In the early 90s. You go all the way back to the 60s, Austin, Texas.
Texas Clock Tower massacre back in the 60s.
Charles Whitman, was that the name?
Charles Whitman's pretty well known because he's sort of the first mass shooter in the modern era. So his name has sort of gone down in the history books. But most of the other ones have faded into obscurity. As sadly do the victims. I mean, it's not that I have any great objection to sort of writing these guys out of history. If the president had stood up and said, look, you know, I'm not going to mention this guy's name, but I'm going to send a new set of gun laws up to Congress and they can vote it down if they want, but I think we need to do something about this issue, I'd be right with him and I wouldn't be criticizing him. But I think, you know, there's an element here of politics. The president doesn't want to get really involved in gun laws because he knows it's not necessarily a popular issue, especially in some of the sort of Midwestern swing states or whatever. What else can he do? And then I think there's an element of changing the focus onto, well, let's at least write the shooter out of the history books. That's what people are talking about. I think in your introduction you had somebody saying, look, that's it, forget about it. He's been caught, it's over. Well, it's over. It's over until the next one. It's not really over.
So you think this impulse to not mention the shooter is actually a sign of impotence more than anything else?
I think it is a sign of impotence, and I think it's. But I also think it's, you know, people, obviously, the victims and their families, I totally understand that, you know, why they don't want to do this. I mean, you know, obviously they're going through horrible suffering and this guy has destroyed their lives. I totally understand that impulse, and I understand the president's impulse to go along with it personally. You know, not mention it for a day or two or whatever. But to make that a substitute, which it seems to be, you know, now people are calling on the media not to mention his name, it's becoming a sort of substitute for other action, and I think that is damaging.
You know, looking back at the Charles Whitman, Austin, Texas, University of Texas Clock Tower case, you know, he was an Eagle Scout. He had an arsenal up there. There was no sense that you know, he was about to pop. There's a curious echo between these two.
No, there is. I mean, you know, as I said, gun laws are not a sort of cure-all. Obviously, there's going to be crazy people in all societies have crazy people. But what distinguishes America from most other modern societies is the ease with which these crazy people, you know, can amass these armories and kill a lot of people.
All right, let's get a sense. Wait, do you go along with John Cassidy there? Is America unique in this sense? What do you think of the impulse to not mention the shooter? Is it an act of impotence or does it accomplish something? 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment to thetakeaway.org. John Cassidy is a staff writer for The New Yorker. John, thanks so much.
Thank you.